Okay, this is the podcast for our module on William Blake. We call Blake a liminal figure, meaning that he literally stands in the doorway, right? Half of him in the Enlightenment, certainly his social and religious criticism would see that as a function of Enlightenment tendencies. And the way he writes, his poetry looks very formal, very staid. But what he talks about and how he illustrates his work are both incredibly romantic. If you take a look at his biographical information that's on the website, you see that he wants to be a professional engraver. In fact, he's technically a professional engraver for most of his adult life. Right? But he publishes his own poetry and wants to illustrate his own poetry all the time. Could have been probably a lot wealthier than he was if he had allowed other people to publish his poetry, but he insisted that his poetry be seen with his illustrations, and that's why I included on the Blake Images page all those, the four poems we're looking at, his original illustrations for those taken from some of his texts. You'll see in the links, if you're interested in seeing something more about this, you can check out the Blake Archive at the University of Virginia, which is spectacular. It sorts all this stuff. But if we look at these four poems, and they're taken from two different books. The first is the Songs of Innocence, right? And the Lamb and the First Chimney Sweeper are taken from that book. And then the second, I think he publishes it 2 years later, are taken from the Songs of Experience. And it's kind of, the Songs of Experience are kind of a poem for poem answer to what's going on in all the poems in the Songs of Innocence. So paired with the Lamb, we have the Tiger, and paired with the First Chimney Sweeper, we have a completely independent Chimney Sweeper, same title, different poem. And he begins with the Lamb, right? The speakers in all of these poems from the Songs of Innocence are young, naive kids, right? 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. They don't really know what the world is like yet. And the speakers from the Songs of Experience are, in fact, I would say far more tragic because they're kids of roughly the same age, but they're kids whom the world has beaten up, right? They know the way the world works, and they're, in general, they're fairly poor, they're being urbanized, they're part of the working poor if they have work at all. But when we look at the Lamb, we get the very rural setting and things like that. And we'll talk about that in a second. If you look at the illustration itself, right, and the questions that the Lamb asks, right, we get, right, there's lots of greenery there. We're set in a rural setting, right? We've got that thatched hut in the background, that little naked kid with all those white little lambs, with all the religious baggage that lambs carry with them, right? Jesus is the Lamb of God and the Good Shepherd. In fact, he alludes to that, right? I, a child, and thou a lamb, we are called by his name, right? And he's asking the Lamb, does he know who made thee? Oh, this good and loving God, right? Talladega Nights baby Jesus, right? 8 pound, 10 ounce baby Jesus, the little booty Jesus. He's the one who made the world, and it works so nicely, right? And gave you clothing of delight and softest clothing, woolly bright, right? We get this refrain, and this almost sounds like it's a kid's nursery rhyme. In fact, Blake was deliberately trying to do that, right? He's meek and he's mild. Well, that's a very nice image of Jesus to have for an 8, 9, 10-year-old kid. We are called by his name, and then God will bless thee. And those things that look like F's there, those are medial S's they're called, and that's the way they wrote S's in the 19th century in England. On the flip side, if you scroll down again, you get to the Tiger. And boy, the rhythm changes and the background changes, and we've got a bear tree instead of a tree that bears fruit. We've got a lone tiger standing there, no human beings there, and we've got, just contrast the first two verses, right? Little lamb, who made thee? Dost thou know who made thee? Gave thee life and bid thee feed by the stream and o'er the mead? Gave thee clothing of delight, softest clothing, woolly bright. Gave thee such a tender voice, making all the vales rejoice. Little lamb, who made thee? Dost thou know who made thee? Now compare that kind of sing-songy, anapestic rhythm with Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night, what immortal hand or eye could frame thy fearful symmetry? In what distant deeps or skies burnt the fire of thine eyes? On what wings dare he aspire? What the hand dare seize the fire? Oh, now we've got a far more primitive, far more bestial image, meter here, rocking through it, right? Tiger, tiger, burning bright, right? Could frame that. And symmetry isn't just an eye rhyme. That's how they would have pronounced that word there. What kind of God made you? And if you look at the tiger, you see what kind of God he's describing. It's a God who, it's Hephaestus, right, is the closest we get. Hephaestus, the God from the Greek pantheon. Vulcan, he's known in the Roman pantheon as. He's the guy who makes Zeus's thunderbolts. He's the blacksmith, right? Supposedly the strongest of the gods, but also known as the lame god because he was cast out from Olympus because Zeus, his father, feared him, right? And what, right, we get this loud, clangy, metallic, right? This thing is forged in an anvil and fire, right? What the hammer, what the chain, in what furnace was thy brain? What the anvil, what the grasp dare its deadly terrors clasp? And then that last line that's really kind of fundamental to this text, right? When the stars threw down their spears and watered heaven with their tears, did he smile his work to see? Did he who made the lamb make thee? Well, how do we account for a God that makes something that is designed essentially, an apex predator, designed for killing everything in its path, as opposed to these lambs who make lovely little lamb chops? How does the same God make these? And that big question there, when the stars threw down their spears and watered heaven with their tears. Now he's referring to kind of an obscure religious reference here, the book of Enoch, the idea that in a vision discusses heaven before the creation of humanity and the fall of the dissenting angels. When the stars threw down their spears and watered heaven with their tears, did he smile his work to see? And, our first inclination is to say, well, God doesn't make evil. God doesn't make these stars that fall down from heaven, or these stars that fall to the center of the earth, as Milton has it, right? These stars that follow Lucifer, the light bearer. Well, Blake takes these enlightenment concerns seriously and says, if we're really going to believe that great chain of being, where only us in the middle of that great chain actually have the idea of free will, he says, those spiritual beings, they're created for one thing and one thing only. They have one purpose. They don't get to choose what they want to do, nor do those animals or plants or rocks. I don't get to say, my dog doesn't say, I think I'm going to be a kangaroo today. No, the dog is a dog. But we can say, I think I'm going to act bestial today. I think I'm going to act prideful today. What Blake's telling us here is if you really believe that, if you push that consequence that we are the only things in the universe with free will, then these angels were created specifically to rebel, and God must have smiled to see his creation come to fruition, as he must also smile when he sees that tiger attack humans, or when he sees that apex predator, right, make us realize that we are not quite the center. Well, now that's a completely different view of the world, certainly, than we see in The Lamb. The next two poems, right, The Chimney Sweeper, I think are really sad because I think even hidden in the very first one, we've got this recognition of just how bad these chimney sweepers' lives are, right? These kids basically are literally sometimes sold by their parents under the guise, it's not their parents are selling them into slavery, they're under the guise of these rural kids usually. Their parents are convinced that they're these gang leaders, essentially, these chimney gang leaders can give their kids a better life in the city. And so they'll give them a pound or a shilling or whatever for their troubles and take their kids away. And they work these kids, well, as you'll see, to death. The idea of cleaning a chimney is, literally, you take a small kid, you strip them down practically naked, put a loincloth on him, put a bag of brushes, stiff bristle brushes on his back, because you need a small kid, because he's got to fit inside a chimney. And you get inside and you brush away all the soot that's on the inside of the chimney. Well, as you can imagine, inhaling all that soot in a very enclosed area is not a good thing for you. The average kind of life expectancy for somebody who was a chimney sweeper would have been very, very short. Lucky to make it out of their teenage years. But that would also be another problem because, you know, you're not going to be a chimney sweeper throughout your teenage years because you're just going to turn too big. So what do you do in the city? You barely remember your parents, right? As we're going to see in the second poem, some kids can barely speak when they're sold into this. As we see here, when my mother died, I was very young and my father sold me, and yet my tongue could scarcely cry, weep, 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 weep. So your chimneys I sweep and in soot I sleep. If you know the movie Oliver or Charles Dickens's Oliver Twist, he's playing with the same idea, right? Not a chimney sweeper gang, but actually a criminal gang there. There's little Tom Dacre who cried when his head that curled like a lamb's back was shaved. So I said, hush, Tom, never mind it, for when your head's bare, you know that the soot cannot spoil your white hair. And boy, that sounds just like O. Henry's The Gift of the Magi, doesn't it? This idea that yes, they had to shave your head because, of course, it's bad for business if we see a kid with blonde hair who's covered, his hair is full of soot. So let's just shave it. You know, and Tom, trying to put the best spin on it, well, I'm sorry, our narrator tells Tom, put the best spin on it, right? If you don't have any hair, then the soot can't spoil it. So that's a good thing. And so he was quiet in that very night. Oh, Tom has this dream that lasts for the rest of the poem. Thousands of sweepers, Dick, Joe, Ned, and Jack, were all of them locked up in coffins of black, and a great kind of duality there, right? They're locked up in coffins of black. They know that they're, well, they don't know yet that their life expectancy is very short, but that's essentially their job, to be locked up in what looks like a coffin, right? In these coffins of black, and to scrub them, right? But it's also literally their death, right? And then this angel comes along and lets them all out at the last trumpet or whatever, the end of the world or whatever, and it's because they're just so innocent, right? They go to heaven, and kind of one of the sweet things here is what does heaven look like? A green plain where they walk in a river and they shine in the sun. Sorry, and wash in a river and shine in the sun. That's it. Very simple. No big deal. Out in the natural world, not penned into a chimney, but there they're actually clean. They're playing in the river, right? And they lift up, they rise upon clouds and spoil the wind. And the angel told Tom, and this is really sad here. The angel told Tom if he'd be a good boy, he'd have God for his father and never want joy. So is that the way God works? That only if you're good, God will be your father? I thought God was everyone's father, right? I thought love coming from the divine was unconditional, right? And never want joy? Well, I don't see their life being very joyful now, and isn't God their father? So where's that father for them? But this, our innocent speaker, he's unaware of this. He can't make, right? He can't put two and two together the way we can, the way the original readers could. And so Tom awoke, and we rose in the dark, and we got with our bags and our brushes to work, right? So there, right, he's consoled him enough to last the next day, and then these last two lines. Though the morning was cold, Tom was happy and warm. So if all do their duty, they need not fear harm. Well, there's another lie we tell, isn't it? If you just do your duty, you need not fear harm. Nothing will harm you if you just do what you're supposed to do. Well, what are these kids doing that they're not supposed to be doing? And yet, aren't we just kind of socially, societally, right, harming these kids? If you take a look at the picture, right, it's bathed in this golden light. Here's this angel letting these kids up who are playing. It's that green field. There's the river in the corner. This is heaven. Right? And but boy, here on earth, they are being harmed. They're doing their duty. They're being harmed. And God isn't acting like much of a father, is he? And this becomes even more overt in the second chimney sweeper, the one from Songs of Experience, right? Where this kid isn't even recognized in the beginning as human, right? And instead of this Edenic spot, this earthly paradise where we see the angel letting these kids out of their coffins, we now have this urban setting, and it looks like rain or snow perhaps coming down there. And it's, as he says, a little black thing among the snow crying weep, weep in notes of woe. "What are thy father and mother say?" And then the boy responds, "They're both gone up to the church to pray. Because I was happy upon the heath and smiled among the winter snow, they clothed me in the clothes of death and taught me to sing the notes of woe." And he sees a cause and effect here, right? Because I was happy on the heath, uncultivated meadow in rural lands. And smiled among the winter snow. They clothed me in the clothes of death, right? He's wearing black clothes because he's been a chimney sweeper. And taught me to sing the notes of woe. Well, the way these kids would advertise this is literally they walk down the streets every morning and cry out, "Sweep, sweep, sweep," until somebody would basically, you know, dozens of people probably would hire them, right? Because remember, these chimneys are cleaned probably once every few weeks because it's the way they not only cook their meals, but they heat their houses. And because I'm happy and dance and sing, they think they have done me no injury and are gone to praise God and his priest and king, who make up a heaven of our misery. So the heaven here isn't for the chimney sweepers, isn't like that heaven that these kids are looking forward to in the first chimney sweeper. The heaven is what society, right? Those ruled by God, the priest, and the king. It's what they've created by what they're doing to these children. Right? The heaven of the rich is balanced on the backs of the poor. Right? In order to have heaven for the rich, you need to have hell for the poor. And as Voltaire is going to tell us, right, the world is never going to run out of poor people, and the world is never going to run out of rich people who continue to take advantage of them. Right? Because I'm happy and dancing. Why is he happy and dancing? Because he's a kid. Right? They think they've done me no injury. And they're gone to pat themselves on the back and to praise God for how great this is all working out. And the priest and the king. So here's this kind of dig at the nation state and at the religious institutions, something analogous to what we'd see from Voltaire, right? Who make up a heaven of our misery. This isn't El Dorado. This isn't the heaven of the first chimney sweeper poem. This is a kid who's experienced, who's seen this world and knows exactly how it works, that, right, the old take advantage of the young, and the rich take advantage of the poor. Now, there are some other poems there, like there are a couple of Holy Thursdays. I used to have a little black child up there, but took that one down. Just take a look at these four and see that Blake really, it's easy to call him both an Enlightenment thinker for his social condemnations and a Romantic thinker for his focus on get out of that city, right? And get to the natural world. That's what heaven is. Heaven is the natural world, right? Oh, who gets to go out of the city in the second chimney sweeper poem? Not the kids, right? Not the chimney sweepers. No, they get to look forward to a bunch of black lung and dying of cancer, usually around about the age of 14, right? Probably a couple years after they've been able to actually fit down a chimney. So this kind of terrible mistreatment and disregard of these kids is one of these things that Blake looks at in both of these poems that he's addressing.